Hello and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man that just got done fighting some mud demons. It's Norbert Morvan.
Maybe in the last minute of your life you want to be something more than a goddamn savage, Hoffmeyer!
Did you drop some mud while fighting the mud demons?
Drop some mud, definitely. Just a little bit of mud.
Bokeem Woodbine mud. Saying that. It always catches me off guard every time I watch it. Like, because
he's so deadpan. Yeah. He's completely deadpan, and you believe it because the legend of Riddick actually matches up with the dude, and yeah. So he might just murder you real quick, and you might not even notice.
That's a great comment too. He's one of the people that lives up to the hype. Oh, I love that. And he's not,
yeah, like, not a game.
You don't look at Riddick and go, "I thought you'd be taller." You don't look at Riddick and go, "Oh, he's not anything." And you're like, "Oh man, like all of my marks are dead."
So yeah, exactly.
He lives, and I gotta tell you though, but after watching Bokeem Woodbine, I've been a long time fan of his. But after seeing him, he was great in The Rock. I liked him in Devil, but when he was in Fargo, his performance in Fargo was so good that it made me mad that he hasn't been used better in movies. I feel like sometimes you see a performance from an actor that's just so good, and you're like, they can do good. They're really good. Like they can nail it. Like you, like Chris Klein in Election. He's so earnest in that, and you just like the kid. Right, and you're like this guy. He can do this. He can do him doing this. But yeah, but Bokeem Woodbine talking about dropping mud. But I gotta tell you, Norbert, the mud demons in this movie, they're mean. They are.
They really are.
When they kill that jackal in the beginning, and then they threaten a little puppy, then he has to go battle it. That's a 90-minute movie I want. Like this planet hates me. Everything's trying to kill me. And then he just battles a mud demon for an hour. Like, just make it the Revenant. Oh, no, not the Revenant. Make it, like...
It's Walden. It's Walden, bro.
Yeah.
It's Walden. He's trying to discover who he is in his time of complete isolation in a world that he never understood or made.
Don't you love it, though? Don't you... The beginning of this 100%. Movie... 100%. And you know what? All right, so we've covered the franchise. We've done Pitch Black, which I really enjoyed revisiting. I mean,
Bless.
It is a lean, mean... I think it's Diesel's. He's way better. I think he's better in this franchise than he is in the Fast and Furious franchise. Hands down.
Absolutely.
I think he's better in this than Triple X. I mean, aside from maybe what? When has he, like, acted? Saving Private Ryan?
Saving Private Ryan and Boiler Room.
Yeah, Boiler Room.
Those are the two that stick out for me.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I know he had a speech in Knock Around Guys, 500 Fights. Yeah. But. Watching him in Riddick, this movie, he's trying. This is 2013, so it's 9 years ago. But he's trying, Norbert. Like he's
right.
And I'm not trying to sound condescending. This is a fun performance by him.
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. Apparently, he leveraged a cameo in one of the
Tokyo
Fast
Drift.
And Furious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So he leveraged the cameo in Tokyo Drift so that he could get total control over this movie because. His heart lies in the nerdy sci-fi stuff, you know? He plays D&D for real, you know what I'm saying? The Pitch Black games that came out for Xbox and PC, his hands are all over the development of those games. So, yeah, he wants to be, you know, the cool whatever guy and takes advantage of that to make the Fast and the Furious and Triple X, which is also underrated movie, Triple X, the first one. But
I think the third one
is
too.
His heart is in sci-fi nerd stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, like, The Last Witch Hunter, Bloodshot,
And that's why, you know, we've been saying for months, you know, this is three movies that they mashed together. It is three movies. And you can tell the start and the ending of each movie. Part one, Richard B. Riddick is Walden, you know? He's trying to survive. He gets the flashback. We get the nice extended cameo from your boy from Australia. You know what I'm saying? He comes back as Vako. The second movie... Hunt for Riddick, Tenchu Assassin. Now he just goes total stealth ninja mode.
Slasher movie.
He's threatening. He's terrifying, and you barely see him. And then the third movie, what are the odds? It's Pitch Black 2, Electric Boogaloo. It's the first movie. They did the first movie in like 30 minutes at the end of this movie, and it's still great.
Do you think this is a movie that gets better with rewatches? Because I just looked at my review from 2013, and my tagline was A Tale of Three Movies. And I love the first part. And then the second part, he disappears and you get mercs who you don't care about. Like Katie Sackhoff is cool. She's good in this as Dahl, D-A-H-L.
D-A-H-L,
yeah. But like, you know, like roll doll. But not Dahl. I kept thinking Dahl. But then he comes back for Pitch Black 2. So the first time I watched this, I remember just going, it's a passion project. I liked it. But I, even in my review, I just wrote, watch A Perfect Getaway instead. I don't know why I wrote that. But I just think, I was like, watch the first, I watched the first 30 minutes, skip 40 minutes, and then watch the, like, Pitch Black 2. But then now that I watch it, these mercs act. They're like, when Batista takes a shot at the dog, at the jackal, and misses it, something was in my eye. Try the scope. Like, that's, there's some good lines.
He says, I had something in my eye, and it's called a scope. The writing is cracking in this movie, man. This movie, with the writing, this is where you get the whole aliens set the standard for how the badass military type dudes are supposed to act. Indifferent, snarky, jerks to each other, super bra, masculine, hyper masculine attitude. You know, we show affection by being jerks. And that team with the captain scumbag Santana, they're all Latins. It's very interesting. They're all Latins. Santana,
Vargas.
Diaz, it's Vargas, you know what I'm saying? My good luck charm, the Jesus freak, you know, he's praying all the time. Everybody does have, a lot of times, reviewers will say, oh, all of these guys are one note. But these are good notes, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes if it's just one note and the notes are good, let it be, you know? Santana is a dirtbag. He's absolutely sexually assaulting that girl that they murder at the beginning that they release.
Is that in a regular cut? Because I watched the director's cut. Is that?
That's what I had. Yeah, that's the one I watched.
Because
yeah, the director.
There's a woman they keep captive that they assault and then they murder.
100%.
And I remember 100%. It's so random. It's not. So he wrote her. I believe. Did he write her a role because he liked her so much for auditions? I think that's what it was. So I think he liked her so much.
That's the info that I got too. Yeah, she plays that death. You feel sorry for her, bro, when she looks Diesel in the eyes and just dies. And oh man.
Wants Santana dead.
You're not supposed to root for Santana, but he's charming. And it makes me feel unclean the older I get when I rewatch this movie, because I can't be cool with this dude, because that girl is absolutely traumatized, yo. Her acting is brilliant.
Get off my porch. And then every time that doll beats him up, you just love it. Like whenever Katie Sackhoff... You know how she got the role? She got the call at 9:30 p.m. She was in bed. And okay, come over to Vin's. Like, we're hanging out. So it was like him and David Twowey and producers. And she called her agents. And eventually she called her mom. And her mom's like, go. So she put on some jeans. She left on her pajama top. And she wiped off the face mask that she had in the car on the way over there. As soon as she walked in, Vin was practicing with a stick. I guess he was practicing his martial arts moves. But as soon as she walked in, he goes, want a beer? And she goes, heck yeah, I want a beer. And then the two of them just had a beer, hung out for a little bit. And then when she was leaving, he's like, you got the role. And that's how she got the role. So just, she just showed up. I bet you Vin just wanted to see if they were cool. Like
She plays one of the guys so well, you know, her breakthrough role in Battlestar Galactica. She's better Starbuck than the original Starbuck. I'm sorry. She's way more interesting. You know, and it could be because, you know, the original Galactica only had one season, but that one season was like 90 episodes the way things used to be back in the 70s and 80s. And she, oh, man. Yeah, she nails it in this movie, man. She gets her sniper when she gets her sniper on. OK, now riddle me this, man. The bullets that she's using to tag the adorable. They're bullets, yo. OK, bullets.
Yeah, they penetrate skin.
Yeah, you want to say that it's barium to make you feel better? Fine. You shoot somebody with that 6-inch bullet, that person is dead. That organism is not moving anymore. And the dog just eats it and just rolls on.
Was it like a rubber-tipped bullet? Because there's no... Yeah, she shot a cannon at that jackal, and it got hit. I mean, its hip would have been done. It couldn't... With the force that thing got hit with.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And the hindquarters of that creature are supposed to be atomized. 100%. 100%.
She had nothing in her eye, though, except for the scope.
It's a 50 cal. She's got a 50 cal rifle, and she's just focused with it, man.
It was kind of weird watching this movie, though, because everyone's always spying on her. Vin Diesel's like, your toes are pink like your nipples. And then Santana's going at her, and then she's like, I don't like guys. And he's like, well, I'm going to go at her, you know, like with her permission. You're like, guys, leave her alone. I understand that this is like a hyper-masculine thing, but in Aliens, they never did that. Like no. they busted chops, but they weren't just.
When Hudson flirts with Vasquez and is just shot down. You know, have you ever been mistaken for a man?
No. Have you?
No. Laughter, banter, witty banter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly.
This one, you're just guys. Let all be.
Calm down.
Yeah. But, I mean, to her credit, though, she does hold her own. Like, when she beats up Santana, you believe it. So it's kind of cool. Yeah. And, I mean, Tuohy, you know, he definitely gives her a lot of... He gives her about as many hero shots as he does Riddick. And,
right.
Like, he just makes them look badass. But, like, she cuts a cool figure. Riddick cut it. I mean, remember in the first one, though, it was a three-parter. So we had Cole Hauser, Vin Diesel, and Radha Mitchell. Like, he gave them all their hero shots. And the second one, I forget her name, but I want to call her Evanescence. But she got, like, super ripped for that role. And then...
Fill me up inside.
So there's always been, like, an interesting characters in this that get, like, real, like, ripped for these roles. But...
Yeah, man.
It's just... you know what's crazy? I've watched Riddick three times now, getting ready for this. And there's no commentary, which I'm kind of happy about. Like, I don't like listening to David Tuohy talk. And I know this is bad. Sorry if you're listening to this. But your commentaries, I'm not a fan of.
This is what you've said. Yeah. Multiple times.
Yeah, I don't want to say it anymore. But, I was hoping for a commentary, but I'm kind of glad this one didn't, because I think this movie just, they shot at Montreal, they forgot to fill out some paperwork, they had to wait 2 months, Vin got the credit to shoot again, Vin got it back because of Fast and Furious, he got a cool cast, and that's the movie. Like, this is not a deep film at all.
Not at all.
But I think it
not at all.
Does a great job of... He joins the Necromongers, but he's miserable. And he just, you know, he has four ladies, but everyone's trying to kill him. And then eventually he gets sent off to Furia. Then he goes to Not Furia. Then he kills everybody. That was pretty cool, though, how that dude shot the cliff and then made him fall. That was pretty amazing.
That was definitely one of my notes, man. The smartest henchman ever. He has learned that in so far two movies worth of henchmen, nobody survives Riddick. So I'm going to step back. And I'm just going to blow the ass out of the cliff, because if falling from terminal velocity height doesn't kill him, but nothing will, you know what I'm saying? But I'm not going to, I don't want these problems. Once he does that with the knife, yeah, okay. Scarface is like, look, let me come up with plan B. I'm not getting these, I don't want that smoke, you know?
What a B it was. I get the spoils. Yeah. And then when Riddick comes back and kills him at the end and takes command again, it's earned this time. He comes back. He was dog. So it's a really cool about face for him, and actually is a pretty good character. There is some character development there. So he was a criminal. He gets recruited by the SeaWorld Judi Dench, aka Celestial. He gets recruited by her, and then he becomes the ruler. Then they kick him out. They trick him. Then he fights his way back. He makes friends with the father, who's only 2 years older. That actor's only 2 years older than Cole Hauser.
Right.
But yeah, he makes friends with Boss Johns, the dad of Johns, and then he goes back and reclaims his throne. Like, that's a good character arc right there. D&D. You know, I've never played D&D, but that seems like a campaign that you would go on, almost.
This is what he does, man. The first third of the movie, you know, Riddick is basically doing E.T. with the dog. The dingo dango, you know, he earns the dog's respect. And at first the dog is trying to murder him, and then he ends up playing fetch, and then he just hangs out with her. He hangs out with the little baby puppy. It's adorable, you know.
Escape
so
artist.
He definitely goes through the emotional arc this time, you know, because when that dog is murdered during part two in the middle, unless you have zero soul, that had to hurt you. And I wrote down that this could be the greatest acting Vin Diesel has ever done. The 10 seconds when that dog just eats all the bullet from Santana in the face. The look on his face, you can't even see his eyes, but the look on his face is just, no, you didn't. Oh, no, you didn't. You killed my dog. Oh, no, you didn't kill my dog. And it looks like he's crying behind those lenses. And that hit me hard, man, because you love your pets, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they managed to turn this movie. They took the whole Disney, let's be friends with the animals, and turned it into a horrific sci-fi drama.
Every time jackals die in this movie, it kills me that jackal dies from the mud demon. That hurts.
They have so much personality. Yeah. The dogs have so much personality.
And just, and you're right too. That look, he just, he, is the veins are popping, but it's not it's not just a hurt look. It's not just an angry look. It's not just a I'm gonna get revenge look. It's not a sneer. It's every single one of those things in one face. And it is. Yeah. And I think you are 100% correct that if this if you were putting together a top five Vin Diesel, this has got to be in the top five. Maybe when he's crying on the ground in Saving Private Ryan. Maybe his speech in the beginning of Fast and Furious when he gets the entire crowd, when he, like, you almost had me. Like, just the way he holds that crowd, maybe. But yeah, I don't think anything touches this because, man.
He's got no real friends in all of these movies. He's got no real friends. And that dog opens up. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Where's your, you know? And the dog, he's having jokes with the dog and whatnot. I've been playing on my Dreamcast. This game called Seaman, right?
Not GameCast.
And he's not, and he's not real either. You know, and you plug in the microphone, hello, and Seaman, what do you want? You know, are you hungry? I'm starving. Turn the heat up in my tank. And it's a virtual pet. But I love hanging out with this fake pet. And this is what Vin Diesel brings to this, man. That dog is his road homie, 100%. He loves that dog. It's the closest. You watch these three movies, man. It's the closest he is with anyone. He's closer with the dog than Jack, with the preacher, everybody.
Oh, wow. You know, that's a great point, too.
It really hurt him.
And I wrote in my notes that Vin Diesel should act next to CGI creatures more often.
100%.
Because there's a relationship there. They're friends. Yeah. They are friends. And, I love it. The way they sell that. I mean, he's just looking. He's in a green screen. He's in a studio in Montreal. Looking at nothing, and you just believe that he loves this jackal.
That's true.
And, yeah, you're right, 100%. What a good scene.
Occasionally, it does look like a PS4 cutscene, the CGI in this movie. Occasionally, it does. When they're on the speeder bike, it definitely looks like something that was on my Sega CD 32X. But, whatever.
Can I ask you a question? So this is what I'm thinking. It's a $40 million movie. So they... I think they definitely I think James Wan could take $40 million and make a better looking movie than this. But I do. Oh, yeah. It's impressive that they made this movie on $40 million. But I also think you can see the budget on $40 million. So I think that's why they went to the Mercs. That's why they went inside. But I also think they stretched it a little too far because you can see it at moments where
occasionally. Yeah.
So is that, I guess my question is, yes, they stretched $40 million. They made that work, but they didn't. I think they went a little too ambitious. So, I mean, would you give them credit? Like, what is that good filmmaking? Like, this movie's a lot of fun. We both love it. But I do think you can see when they stretched it too far.
Well, and I think it's because you and I, we're watching this in super HD.
Yeah.
We're watching high quality versions of this. If this comes on your average TV back in the day, when this movie came out in 2013. The glaring CGI, the glaring green screen stuff is not so clear. It wouldn't be as clear. But I'm watching this in 1080p at least.
No, that's a great point,
so
too.
So it shows up. It shows up a bit.
And they definitely picked and chose? They were strategic about which moments to feature the excellent visual effects. When he first battles the mud demon, there are some really excellent visual effects in this movie, but I think they had a list of top tier, middle tier, bottom tier. We want these moments to look great, these moments to look good, and these moments just don't Battlefield Earth us. Like, just don't.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like, don't.
The end of the movie when he has just the battle for all humanity on Bald Mountain, and he's just being swarmed by these incredibly lethal 6-foot wingspan creatures. That kind of looks a little janky, but then it's cool when the lightning flashes.
Yeah.
That doesn't look so bad. But the creatures are so impossible, you know?
Yeah, they can breathe out of their tails. And you know what's interesting? In the beginning, that one is just super deadly, and at the end, he's just fist fighting them. But he is.
Yeah.
He's used to their poison. It's a good thing that it's not like a shellfish allergy, because that just gets worse and worse and kills you. So he gets used to the poison. He gets used to that. This isn't like mud where, you know, you get bit by a rattlesnake and then you can't get the poison again, like the anti-poison again. But I tell you what I like, though, is at the end of this, he gets stabbed in the chest, and he's by himself about to die, and he gets rescued by Johns and Dahl. I think Vin Diesel is not afraid to make himself look human. I think on the Fast and Furious movies, Megan and I were talking about this, but with all the egos that have been brought in, because if you think about Fast and Furious, the first one, he's a total bonehead, and he's like cheering about something, then he wipes out his car. He's like, yeah, takes his eye off the road, boom, he wipes out. Like, that's kind of a bonehead move, right? He lets 100%. Paul Walker into his world, so he makes mistakes. But then once you get to the ones with the more egos with Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham, then he becomes this unstoppable. In Last Witch Hunter, that he just, I'm just immortal, so you can't hurt me. But it was nice. That's what I like about Riddick, though, is he can get hurt, and he needed to be saved at the end. Not many superheroes do that, and I like it. Like, I thought that was cool. Like, Radha Mitchell in the first one helped him out. Like, he got help getting out of the prison.
The second movie when he's fighting against the Lord Marshal, he needs help. Yeah.
Yeah, and I like that about Riddick. And for some reason, Vin is able to let down his ego a little bit. But I don't know about his ego, but he's just able to be more human on the Riddick franchise than he is any other movies. And I think that's why I like Riddick so much. We were doing the Bloodshot episode, and David Cross, Megan, and I were on it, and we were trying to figure out who's the best Vin Diesel character out of all of them. And we decided on Riddick. But I believe it's gotta be.
This is his most personal role, and it's hilarious because it's hard sci-fi action, you know, in the way that Sigourney Weaver, you know, as much as you want to say, yeah, she was in Working Girl and she should have gotten an Oscar for Gorillas in the Mist, she's Ellen Ripley.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And the fourth movie never happened. So part one, part two, and three, that's her arc. That's it. Four never happened. Get away from me.
And are you happy that five didn't happen with Blomkamp?
Okay. Quick tangent. Part two, aliens, right? All they have to do is take the licensed Dark Horse comics, put those on screen. Mark Verheiden, he wrote, I think, Dr. Giggles, and he's a writer for a bunch of sci-fi stuff that's been on TV. I think he's written for Battlestar Galactica even. So it's not like he couldn't do it. But they want it to be cheap because Aliens, the second one, not a high-budget movie, but it made a ton of money. Because
Cameron, he can stretch it, his Corman experience.
Right, he learned from Roger Corman, exactly. And so that's what they had to do. And every day they go away from the Dark Horse comics, written by Verheiden in them, a small child dies in a village somewhere because we're being denied the best stuff. And that's all I'm going to say about
that. I mean, Nuke gets killed in the third one. So a small child dies.
Please don't just let's get back. I'm so mad. I've been mad about this for like 30 years.
You know, Bokeem Woodbine, he gets Alien 3'd in this movie.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
I want to say something about Alien 3. I watched it when I was quite young. I watched it like, you know, I don't even think I was teens yet. Maybe I was teens.
97.
No, 97. Alien 3 was 97?
97. Yeah, I was in college.
No, because wasn't the game was 97. So Fincher had made that beforehand. Because he did 7 in 97. So I think, wasn't it like 93?
Oh, sorry, 92.
Yeah, okay, so I saw that immediately. So I was 11 when I saw it.
I was in high school.
And when you're 11 and you watch that, and you're seeing Dutton like getting killed, he sacrifices himself in so many movies. It gets old. Legion, Mimic.
Yeah.
Alien 3, but Charles Dance is in it, and then just the alien going right up to her, the money shot of the alien going right up to her face. She sacrifices herself at the end. There's, I like the claustrophobic vibe of it. Also, there's a lot of prison movies, No Escape, Alien 3, jeez Louise. But I don't know, I remember watching it at that age, and I didn't really know about all the behind-the-scenes drama, and I had watched Aliens beforehand, but I just sort of, there was enough, for me sometimes, if there's enough memorable visuals, I'll give the movie a pass. I feel like that's how I've lived my entire life of watching a movie. Like, even if it's not great, if there's some visuals that are A+, I'm like, it's a B.
Three is a cromulent film. And the older that you get, it's a perfectly cromulent film, you know? And the director's cut that they put in the 9-disc box set on DVD, it shows they left a lot of stuff out. The studio ruined that movie.
No wonder Fincher hated it.
Yeah, the studio ruined that movie. It was the studio. And that's why the second part of Riddick, where he becomes Tenchu Assassin, that's why it's so cool, because the planet is wide open, but he manages to go where he wants. He's sneaking around. We get another cool shot of him sitting on top of the ship eating fruit.
Yeah.
That's a callback from the first movie. Mm-hmm. And he can't be stopped because he's quiet. He's a murderer. He has a chance to kill Bokeem Woodbine, but he just decides to grab the power cells because why not? You know, are you scared of me? Are they scared of me? Yes, they're scared of you. Finish. Well, I thought Bokeem was dead. I'm glad they kept him alive so that the monster gored him brutally.
And I think he just doesn't... I don't think he kills when he doesn't mind you.
There's a certain honor. There's a certain honor to him that we mentioned before. He doesn't lie to people. He's not a liar. He's a scumbag and he's a dirtbag. Yeah, but he's not a liar. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't kill you unless he absolutely have to. He's jerking around Daddy John's, Papa John's, the whole movie. Man. You know? Papa John's, you know, can you tell me what happened to my son?
Well, do you like bacon? Because sometimes on a bagel, bacon, egg, and cheese. Can you tell me what happened to my son? Yesterday I found a little puppy. He was fun. I mean, and just please, can you tell him?
You know? And then when he does tell him, he never really tells him the whole story. You know, your son was hooked on morphine, you know. He doesn't say, well, I slashed him and left him to a planet full of bioraptors. He didn't say that. But he did, yeah. He tried to kill a kid, and he did. He did. He was going to sacrifice them all so that we could get on here, you know. Because, you know, we don't need them. Hey, don't look back, for Christ's sake. John's was the real
dirtbag. Wait, do that again. That was a perfect Cole Hauser.
Man, don't look back, for Christ's sake.
Wow.
You know?
You just added. Yeah. So you have Keith David, you have Tommy Lee Jones, and now you have Cole Hauser.
You feel that here? Riddick went for the sweet spot, you know? So maybe the care and feeling of my nerve endings is my goddamn business.
Oh.
He went for the sweet spot.
I would love it if Riddick was talking to Papa John's and he just, I got this book, Infinite Jest. And he just starts reading it and he does all the footnotes as well. Footnote 4063.
All you know right. What I'm saying?
Just messing with him. Yeah, I mean, what happened to my son? And like, Papa John's isn't a bad dude. I think that's why he messes with him.
That's right.
I don't like him, but he's not the Santana. So he.
No.
He's kind of like. Not. He's kind of. He wants to kill me. But I killed his kid. I get it. Like, there's exactly. I get it there. There's a.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Fair enough. And he's not a terrible dude. So he, you know, he could have severed him many times, but I think he. I don't mind him. Yeah.
Well, they come out of the spaceship, you know, Papa John's, Starbuck, Bokeem, and Native American dude. And they come out of the ship, and they're all in uniform, and they have the Brave Star Sheriff badges on, and they kind of look like tools, you know. But you matching get outfits. It. Yeah. I didn't know there was a dress code.
Diaz.
100%, you know, because they look like douchebags. You know, they're just not, no, come on, man, not you guys. Get out of here. Yeah, we don't believe in you. Whatever. You're fake-ass cops. That's the funny thing. Because just like John's, you know, he's putting forth this air of fake authority. You're not the police, bro.
Mm-mm.
You're not the police. You're also bounty hunters, you know? So he's just jerking him around. Riddick, can you tell me what happened to my son? You ever read Marie Kondo?
Saving space.
Sometimes you just got to get rid of all the crap in your house. That's what I did to John's. In his mouth. Like, what are you talking about?
Listen, Riddick, I'll give you three hours to tell you about the plot of Gladiator, the 2001 Ridley Scott-directed movie. Cut, first scene, Maximus, walking through a field. A battle rages, trebuchets are shooting, catapults lunge, the Roman emperors have the people on the outskirts of the civilization on, they're pushing them back. This is the final battle, this is their last stand. Will the pagans win? Cut.
Where's my son, Riddick?
Four centuries ago, I used to steal cars. Just for the hell of it. You ever get a charge? Playing with your life? All bets are off.
I own a tuna.
Keeps.
I owned a restaurant. Terrible tuna sandwiches. Don't eat the tuna.
I want to hear more of this.
Just tell me. Tell me, Riddick. Tell me.
I was like,
I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. You
could cut ties with all the lies that you've been living in. That's Jumper from Semi-Charmed Life. Wait, yeah. No, from Third Eye Blind.
Where's my son, Riddick? You know that song, Semi-Charmed Kind of Life. It's actually about doing crystal meth, performing oral sex on women that you don't care about. Same way I didn't care about John's and the badge.
And then you cut and everyone's just sitting around in a big circle listening to his story?
Yeah, with the most intense look on their face. My God, Semi-Charmed Kind of Life.
Oh, man. Take another bump and then I get hit back too. Oh.
You see, it all makes sense.
I sang that at my wedding.
I ain't the thing you gotta be scared of. You gotta be scared of the fact that 14-year-olds were running around singing those lyrics at the time. Meanwhile, their parents were trying to ban Ice Cube and Ice Tea.
Don't get me started on Liz Phair.
Oh, man.
You know our flag means death? Like, he tells everyone a bedtime story every night before the... So he tells all his crew. Well, like, Santana's sitting there, legs crossed, listening to Vin Diesel tell him about the time that he went to go see Jumper in Korea because it was a worldwide release and you could jump everywhere.
But these are the things that you can do when you describe how you're going to murder a man and it works out exactly as you've described, you know? And what foot control that he has, man. Perhaps Riddick should have been a professional soccer player because he kicks that 6-foot machete across the room and perfectly decapitates. Well, he didn't even decapitate him. He cut his head in half, which is harder than decapitation.
He half-capitated him.
Yeah.
He decapitated him.
He caught his head in the box.
So Megan started singing that. She's like, one, you get a box. Two. Like, then she said something about a machete. And then she's like, three, it's a head in the box. I was so proud of Megan when she did that, too. But yeah, I mean, listen, Chekhov's box. I mean, that machete.
Chekhov's box, man.
And what a great kick. It's so sassy. And also, in Chronicles of Riddick, I hated it when he talked to the merc. You did three things wrong. First, you didn't pay the parking ticket. Or, like, oh, first, you didn't put the change in the parking slot. Three, you know, like, you parallel parked on the wrong side. Like, you're like, shut up, Riddick. In this one, though, he's like, I'm going to kill you in 5 seconds. And then he kills him in 5 seconds. Like, that's cool.
That's it.
Telling someone three things about what they did wrong with no consequences, then you're like, ugh, get out of here.
4-man crew for me.
I don't care if Riddick said that to me. If Riddick's like, three things, I'm like, listen, just kill me. Because I don't want to hear it. Shut up. Like, I wonder if he would say, would Riddick save my life if I did that? Like, Riddick, come on, man. I get it. I don't want to hear it.
Well, that's why the middle section of this movie, when it becomes the Tenchu assassin, is so great. Because he doesn't make a lot of empty threats.
Yeah.
And he just pops up and, oh, by the way, I'm going to distract you with the corpse of your friend so that I can get my perv on as I scope out Starbuck as she's taking a bath. And I'm going to take her makeup case. Which is funny that she's carrying around a makeup case because she's clearly a hardened murderer. But she's still got the makeup case just in case, you know, the blush is just so off. And then he uses that to look into the ship and see that, aha, the power node is missing.
Yeah, pink toes.
Match your nipples. I was like, hey, oh, hey, me too, Riddick.
That was so gratuitous, that shot.
It really was. I'm going to go balls deep and doll. Really?
Oh, gosh, Riddick.
She said so many times that she's not straight, bro. What are you doing?
Dude, when Riddick, that does annoy me. So in the first one, he cuts hair. In the second one, he smells Tandoi Newton's hair. And then this one, he's talking like that. It's like, Riddick, man, like, I get the anti-hero thing, but you're a perv. Like, it's not
You're a creep, bro. You're a creep.
Do you think
creep. You're He's not Santana, but he's a creep. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm a creep. Wait, no, that's... Wait, there's so many creep songs. I'm a creep. I'm a winner.
No, no, no.
What the hell so am I doing here?
TLC is So I Creep. And then I think Coldplay is I'm a Creep.
No, that's... Isn't that Radiohead? I'm a creep. Radiohead.
You know what? It's all the same group to me. Coldplay, Radiohead, Oasis. They're just depressed and millionaires, and I don't understand why they're so sad.
Do you? I think Oasis is so popular because when an Oasis song comes on, I feel like I can sing it well. When a Guns N' Roses song is on, I don't even try, right?
No.
When a Christina Aguilera song is on, I just keep my mouth shut and lip sync. But when Oasis song comes on, I'm like, you know, or Third Eye Blind or Three Doors Down, I'm like, I can keep up with this. And after all, you know, that's what I think.
Dude, that's 70% of music that came out between 1960 and 1999. That's the whole reason why rock no longer exists.
Do you want to dance and hold my hand? See, Beach Boys. But yeah, so do you think since this movie came out in 2013, you had Fast and Furious 6, his Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, that was 2014. He was getting ready for Furious 7.
Right.
There are scenes in this movie where it's Santana pulling a bomb from a locker for 7 minutes.
That was the...
It's a good scene. But tense, do you think they had to write around Riddick? Because he's in almost every frame of the first couple movies. You know, sans the Radha Mitchell and scenes in Pitch Black. But once it gets going, he's in a lot of it. But he virtually disappears. Do you think it was because of prep on Fast 6? Because they shot this in Canada. Fast 6 shot in the UK. And then he also had, you know, he was getting off Fast 5. Well, no, that was 2011. So do you think that he was kind of flip-flopping? Because he does disappear for big chunks of the movie.
I put it like this. That scene with the locker, you know, when Johns is saying that, well, you were unconscious. Maybe he took key off you. And he's like, so let me get straight. You think he removed the key, opened the locker, and took the... When he lays it out like that, you say to yourself, you know what? That is pretty goddamn ridiculous. But then, in the back of your mind, that's Riddick, though.
You start wondering where your wallet is.
All the time.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. You start looking around your apartment. You know, I had my keys yesterday. Is Riddick, are you in my apartment, Riddick? What's going on? Riddick again. Foiled again. Riddick. You know, it's like the Pink Panther. You know what I'm saying? He can do all, see all, know all. And so the locker scene is mad tense. And then when Santana is trying to open the locker, he's going to do the code again. Everybody steps 10 feet back. And then in a nod to the 21st century, Batista pulls out his camera phone to record it just in case he blows up so he can upload it to like 28th century Twitter or TikTok. It's hilarious, it's man. So that scene is tense. That scene is tense, bro.
Do you think James Gunn saw this movie and thought that Batista has comedy chops? Because the whole bit of, yeah, I shot him. Well, maybe I didn't. Like, his affect is so there, that Guardian. Yeah. And then Vin was in Guardians with James Gunn. So I wonder if this movie got him that role because of his... Because he has a very specific line delivery, Dave Bautista. Mm-hmm. Like, it's... Mm-hmm. John Cena has the motor mouth. Dwayne Johnson has the aw shucks. And then I think, not aw shucks from Dwayne Johnson. But yeah, I think Dave Bautista has this very sarcastic.
It's a snark.
Unironic. Yeah, snark. A snark.
It's a snark.
Yeah, but he's good at it.
Yeah. He's snarky. And then he shows up in Blade Runner, and you just feel really sad for him when he's just a replicant cooking that goo. And then he gets murdered by Cheekbones, whatever his name is.
The Goss. And then he's in Dune. That's a good movie.
I gotta watch that.
I gotta tell you, man, Stuber's one of my least favorite movies ever made. I watch Stuber, and the whole movie is Dave Bautista goes, oh, well, something inappropriate. And then Najani goes, oh, that was really inappropriate. And then he said something inappropriate, and guy goes, well, I wouldn't say that. Like, and the whole movie is just, I can't believe you said that. What are you, in the 20th century? Like, that's the entire movie.
So they just put him Well, yeah, you know, there are certain people that can elevate the material, and then there's times when the material is so bad that it cannot be elevated, you know, movie 43, you know, that type of stuff.
That movie physically pained me to finish.
Yeah, it was terrible, man. It was terrible.
And everyone's trying, you know what's interesting though? I don't want to hate on it because everybody is trying so hard.
Yeah.
It's kind of like kicking, it's just like you see a sports team and they are giving everything they have, but they lose 40-0. Like you don't want to dog on them because they were out there trying. They were slide tackling, they were running, they were getting cramps, like they were really trying. So you don't want to
It's because somewhere in the back of their mind, they thought they were making the modern version of the Kentucky Fried movie, you know, put together a bunch of sketches and, you know, throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. But man, when Big Jim comes in,
Big Jim,
look,
I was about to yell that.
Yeah.
In the massage theater.
Exactly. You know, take him to Detroit. No, that's still hilarious, man. 50 years ago. Still hilarious, bro.
The depravity and thing where they're hitting butts with pies.
And this is what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But when Batista's on screen in this movie, beyond the fact that he's just massive, okay, he exudes IDGAF throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Santana is clearly a madman and a terrible human being, but he's not afraid of him.
Mm-mm.
You know, he's not afraid of Riddick. You know, the dingo dongo. Yeah, I shot it, whatever. Maybe I didn't. So what? What are you going to do? Huh? Had something to buy. Whatever. You know, maybe we should follow. Yeah. Unlock that guy.
Yeah, I love that line. Gets. Yeah. He gets it. He gets it. In this movie, Diaz gets it.
Totally.
That's why. You know what's interesting, man? I did not enjoy this the first time I watched it. But the more I spend with it, well, because you know what it is, man? I complain about this all the time, but I do fall prey to it where it's just expectations. And like they promoted this as Riddick is back. He's back to being Riddick. And so the first half, when he's just spending 40 minutes battling a mud demon, and I'm you're like, yes, this is Castaway 2. This is amazing. Right. And then it just goes, and then you hang out with Papa John's for 40 minutes. And you're kind of thinking, what is happening? And then it becomes Pitch Black 2.
Right.
And you're like, oh, well, this is Pitch Black again. And so the first experience for me was not fulfilling. But after watching it again with expectations set, or me knowing that it kind of comes to a screeching halt, it's three movies. How about me knowing now that it's three movies? I really sat back and enjoyed every performance because, I mean, there's some zinger lines in here, dude. There are...
The writing is the best of Tolhe's Riddick trilogy. The writing is hilarious.
And, I mean, aside from, like, the doll stuff, which I think he probably could have been a little bit more creative with, but she's still so cool in it. She gets away with all of it. But, I mean, just that sniper line about it's called a scope.
That's LOL. You gotta laugh out loud. It was hilarious.
If I'm a mercenary and I miss and I say I have something in my eye and someone goes, yeah, it's called a scope, I wouldn't even be mad. Even in a culture where, you know, you gotta go beat somebody up or you gotta be offended, that's one of those burns that even if you live in like a hyper masculine society,
100%.
You just go,
you're like, yeah, you got me. You got me. You're right.
And no one even wants the dog on Diaz after it. I think everyone's just like, Santana. Everyone's so.
Yeah. Sick burn, bro.
Instead of making fun of the other guy, like, oh, you got goth, or everyone went, that's a good burn, like that's so that but just the dynamics between them. I mean, listen, John's showing up. I mean, he just did the alarm beacon, and so of course people would show up, so if John's got that, he would come, so that makes logical sense. They show up looking like matching employees. It was just, you know, the biker chase, you know, like, I'll drive it like I stole it. But just watching him cruise on a bike while doing sweet triple X-esque tricks and burning mud demons' faces with his engine. I don't even know what to call it. This afterburn. That's pretty amazing, Norbert. And he does a You know when dirt bikes jump a ramp over 40 cars and the guy kind of keeps one hand on the pedal and one hand on the back? Riddick does that.
Yeah, he does the evil Knievel. He does the evil Knievel, you know? And the way that the speeder bikes are basically just massive Harley Davidsons of the future.
Pedals up here.
They're cruisers. They're cruisers. The tech in this movie is another thing that I really appreciate. Because it's not like when Prometheus comes out, and sure, it's a whaling ship, and so Whalen's put all his money into it, so of course it's going to be more advanced than the Nostromo, but the tech on the ship in Prometheus is just 17 million years more advanced than everything else that you see in all the other movies.
The surgery scene?
Yeah, but this, the tech in this movie, it's got that beat up, super used, we're just putting this stuff together with duct tape and fishing line kind of look, you know, the motion detector that they use.
That was cool.
But it's the worst motion detector since the one that Ash makes in Alien, you know. Micro changes in air density, my ass. This thing is so easily tricked, you know, that literally a dog throws it off kilter. By taking one of the set, look how much stuff you got to set up. You got to nail it into the ground. Then you got to put sensors all over the place. Then you got to pray to Jesus while facing the east. It's come on, man. It was a lot, that motion detector.
But it set up a great moment later in the film when it starts going off, when the creatures come.
When it becomes pitch black too.
Yeah.
And you just see these things coming out of the mud. And you just realize, you know what? This is not the adventure I signed up for, man. Oh, it gets really dark really fast.
And I guess it's not organic at all when it becomes pitch black too. It's not. It's, for me, it's not, because you're just going, they're just doing pitch black again. But
yeah,
those mud demons are pretty cool. I mean, their powers fluctuate throughout the movie for sure.
Right.
But they make enough of a presence in the first half that when they get out, you're like, this is real. Like, they're in trouble.
It's a problem, bro.
Yeah. I mean, was it necessary? I don't know. Mm. Is it still three movies and I love it? Because this is the director's cut, man. It's 2 hours and 7 minutes.
It's a solid 2 hours and 3 minutes minus the end credits, man.
Duh. And you and I really don't care about longer, shorter movies. I think if it's a good movie, you get engrossed in it. Like Heat. You know, you watch Heat. You love Heat. Heat goes by in 2 hours, even though it's 3 hours. So do you think this movie could have been shorter? Do you think this could have been a 100-minute movie?
Well, this is the thing. We've both watched the director's cut. The director's cut has 8 additional minutes.
Oh. I don't know. You could take that out.
So if you feel like there are things that can be taken out, that's cool. But for me, I think it's great, man. I love Richard B. Riddick is Walden in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I love that flashback where we get to see our boy Vako once again just be a super creepy dude.
Yeah.
You know, we get gratuitous nudity, which, you know, Norbert grew up on HBO and controversial, pay-per-view movies back in the 90s. We'll always take that. You know?
In my notes, I wrote 4 women?
Four. Because there are so many ... distractions. And I'm like, okay, thanks. It was completely uncalled. Yeah, no, he didn't. Hey, anyway.
Norbert.
I'm sorry. I've been doing skills in the Catskills. That's my vaudeville material.
Try the veal. I'm here all night.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yes, 4 women. Absolutely. We have so many questions, because clearly, what we learned from the necromancers in the second movie, they're not interested in getting laid, really.
Mm-mm.
They're all about, you know, the underverse, you know. And then at the end of the movie, we see the entryway to the underverse, and it looks like an off-ramp in Florida on the highway. You know, when you get construction, the lights.
My house was off of one of those ramps.
There it is, you know. Yeah. And since you've come back from the underverse, I got to say, you've been a real dick, man. Like, what's going on?
I could reach through my computer right now and pull your soul out, just to let you know.
Again, you know, the last time I told you to put it back, and now, you know, I haven't been able to play basketball right ever since. Thanks a lot, jerk.
He's in Face Off too, Colin Fuhr. I just watched that the other night, and I was like, hey, it's the Master Chief. No, it's the Commander. It's what's his name in that movie? The
Lord High.
Lord Marshal.
Damn it! Thank you. You made me forget.
I'm surprised you didn't say SeaWorld. I keep mentioning that because if you listen to our Chronicles of Riddick episode, I called Judi Dench a celestial. I called her a SeaWorld.
Yes, you did. And that was hilarious because why not? You know, why was it a good idea for Tandy Newton to threaten her with being thrown out of a plane when she's an air elemental, Lawrence? Hello, McFly. You can't throw somebody who floats out of a plane and expect them to die. Anyway, that's like the one thing that always irked me about that, man. You know?
Yeah. If I was a celestial, I would just go along with it. Oh, you guys are going to throw me off this cliff? Oh.
Oh, no. What will I do?
Okay. I guess just do it? Sure.
Yeah. Whatever. Your threats are, I'm terrified.
And they see me at Chili's later, and I'm just housing some Coors Light. They're like, what? I thought we killed you.
But I'm eating that baby. I'm sorry. And I'm like, I'm stuck in the wrong deck.
I'm a SeaWorld, fools.
Let me ask you a question, man. What are some things we do on general principle? Because if John didn't come back and Riddick did, Dala was to kill him on general principle. So what are some things that we do on general principle? I know that there are certain people who you punch in the face off general principle.
Yeah.
What else?
All right, so just general. So I want you to kill him on just general principle.
Just off GP. GP.
Man, you know what's interesting about? You know what I'm learning about general principle is that you got to go out your way sometimes to inflict that pain on general principle. So I've kind of. So I've stopped doing that. Like so, sometimes on a walking trail, and I'm so suburban right now. I apologize, but I like to hike. On a suburban, on a trail, when four people are walking in a row and you have to go on the very corner of the trail to get around them, general principle, you should just lay one of them out, you know, just like shoulder bump them. But now I'm like,
100%.
But I'm like, I got to go out of my way to do this. So I just let them do it because I'm like, if I do it, then I'm the bad guy. I've gone soft, Norbert. But yeah, I mean, okay, so he kills your boss.
Yeah, if somebody kills your boss, you got to kill them on general principle.
But what job are you working at? You at a Jiffy Lube? Like, where are you at? Well,
point taken, you know. Perhaps, you know, the take a penny, leave a penny, you know, on general principle, you know. Do you leave a penny? I don't.
Yeah, I mean.
I constantly take more pennies than I give on general principle because don't leave free money in front of me in a society where scarcity is artificial. You know, that's a whole other podcast. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah, take five pennies, leave one.
Off GP. Don't leave free money in front of me. I'm taking it off of GP. Absolutely.
But, yeah, I guess, man, because she doesn't care much about John's, does she?
You know what? I think that they're, especially because their relationship is not sexual, they're bosses. It's business. Yeah. You know? He gives the orders to Dahl. Dahl gives the orders to everybody else. She's the second in command. You know, Bokeem and a Native American guy, they're just muscle, you know, but highly skilled muscle. Bokeem has the ability to talk to the machines and ask them if they want to be a part of the mission. And they're like, nah, doesn't want to do it.
Well, that's a great point then, because, all right, let's look at Punisher. So if John Travolta gets killed and Punisher, Will Patton's the second in command, he's got to kill the person that killed John Travolta.
Off of GP, 100%.
So then Dahl, yes. But if you're Bokeem Woodbine, no. What do you think?
Well, Bokeem Woodbine,
because it's your second in command.
But he was a loyal part of the team, and he talks to machines, as we saw.
Yeah.
Earlier on, you know.
That crew would do it, maybe. A loose mercenary group wouldn't. If you wear matching uniforms, okay. How about this? If we go out, if we're a mercenary crew wearing matching uniforms, and one of us gets killed, the other three have to avenge the person.
Well. Once you're wearing matching uniforms, general principle is an axiom now. It's a law. It's something that you can't avoid it off of GP. Riddick does a lot of stuff off GP. He killed John's off of GP.
Mm-hmm.
Because John's
going to kill
children.
A kid.
Yeah.
And the other mercenaries were hunting him and not going, this is a bad idea. Remember the guy he lets live? The guy's like, this is a bad idea. He kills the other guy.
That's right.
So he kills the people that are like, shut up, let's kill him. Boom, done. But if you're like, man, this dude's real. I am not going to do this. I'm scared. He'll knock you out.
That's right.
So I think that's good. I would do that. If I had a code, but see, here's the thing, Norbert. If we were a group of individualist mercenaries, so we wore our own outfits, you know, I wear nothing but, you know, jean shorts. I look like I'm from Florida out of the 90s. I got a shirt with a duck on it that's exploding through the front. You can see the butt on the back of my shirt, and it has an Anaheim Mighty Duck shirt, something like that.
Your legs are gleaming white because they never see the sun, but your face is super reddish brown. Exactly. I got you.
I got a flat top. I mean, and then you show up and you're looking just incredibly dapper. You have, you're wearing a cardigan that everyone's like, that's a tailored cardigan. How do you tailor a cardigan? Because that's, you don't buy that off a shelf, right?
You can't. You can't.
And so, Al, we're all individuals. If Riddick gets you and there's six of us, we're just going to go, well, it's more money for us.
That's it.
But
that's
if we're matching uniforms.
That's it. Right.
Then we got to do
it. If you're matching, you're kind of a paramilitary unit like the Boy Scouts. You don't do you do things off of GP and loyalty, you know, vengeance. Most of these things with GP are vengeance, you know, related, because when Santana kills the dog, he's got to die off of GP. Everybody believes.
Yeah, Santana's dead.
You know, but he's a bad person.
If people steal from us, let's say we're the loose fitting, like the different fitting people, but someone steals something from us, we got to go kill him.
And is that more of a GP situation or just respect? You know, you're putting the fear into people. You know, you can't steal from me. I'm going to teach you a lesson.
Yeah, that's I guess that's a lesson.
So that, because there's vengeance, that's a part of GP. And then there's also, look, there are certain things that people are going to do. You know, I'm taking a penny instead of leaving a penny off of GP because money. You know, you kill my dog, Jesus Christ, that's John Wick 3 movies off of GP.
Yeah.
You know.
He's very naive in that movie. He's like, I'm retired. I have your marker here. No, I'm good.
That's right.
And then they blow him up, and he's like, I'm going to go get you now.
Nothing makes him more angry than the death of his dog at the hands of another. Off of GP, you got to die.
He destroys so many things. But, you know, you're right. That's great. I mean, yes, if you're a mercenary, if you're anybody and someone blows up, look at Gross Point Blank. Martin Blank is hunted tirelessly because he blew up a dog. So GP.
There it is. GP.
Oh.
General principle.
That's it. But is that revenge then?
Depends on who's the murderer. You know, if it was my dog, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
I'm not killing someone else because their dog was murdered by someone else. So it's got to be my dog.
What if you're part of a matching crew where you all wear matching uniforms?
Paramilitary, Boy Scout.
Yeah.
You know.
So then you got to.
Boy Scout. Yeah. Yeah,
but if I'm wearing my jean shorts and you're wearing your cardigan and your dog dies, I don't have to.
All bets are off. You know, how close are we? You know,
I met him last week. These are some interesting characters we've created.
There it is.
But Dahl would do it, I guess.
General principle's real.
Because she doesn't know him quite yet. Yeah, I think Dahl would do it.
Dahl has a certain level of respect for Riddick at the end.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, John says, come on, man, we got to go. Put this thing in there. Let's go. And then I guess John's, you know, explains, hey, you know, Diaz tried to kill me, but then Riddick was like, no. And so now we're cool. So let's go get him.
Riddick sliced him in half.
In half. And he still had the power to do severe damage to their speeder bike.
Yep. That was cool. You know? He lit up Batista.
And that was another example of the general principle, actually. You saved my life, I'm going to save yours. Off of GP, I got to do it.
Because he couldn't have run back. He can't run back and save him like a bozo. They have to go like a dingo dongo. They had to get up in their ship and light stuff up.
Son, they came with literal guns a-blazing.
Well, they lit those things up. They blew up an entire mountain of those things, of mud demons.
Also, and that's another thing. What are the chances that every other planet you land on has just endless waves of carnivores that come out of nowhere for some natural weather event?
So when it's night, creatures come out. When it rains, creatures come out. What are some other situations?
Right?
Daylight?
So,
no. Well, they're solar-powered?
Solar-powered creatures, right? They come out of rocks. Absolutely. You know, but they sing songs before they murder you, and they break dance.
First, they do break dance.
dun 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 dun.
Radiation.
Dun 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 dun.
Can't charge this. Duh,
Oh God.
Hey, you started it.
I blame myself.
So solar power doesn't work. So no, like there's no night, then there's water. What else could there be that could come out?
Okay. Well,
cold?
We know that.
Really furry creatures come out? So it's a really hot planet. But in the core of the Earth, it's really cold. So when it freezes, the Yetis come out.
Oh, man. Dude, Pitch Black 4, Yeti planet. He was already on the snow planet, dude.
Yeah.
You know? So
he
had the chance to meet the Wampa.
We've done Death Planet. What's the name of this planet? Oh, not Furia, but what's a better name? Dry Planet? Occasionally Wet Planet?
Oh, you know what? Skin Treatment Planet, because I'm pretty sure that clay, bro, it's got to be good for your skin. You know what I mean? Clearing up that eczema. He like had that stuff all over him, and he's fine, you know? He had a compound leg fracture. He covers it in goo.
Rub some dirt jumps, on it.
He jumps. He literally does. He jumps into the pool of bubbling acid water, and he never gets an infection.
Wow. You could bottle that. You know, in Iceland, they have those really beautiful water. I sat in those things. Your skin feels great.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
centuries
gotta,
ago.
He's got to wipe out. Ago, oh, sorry.
Totally. No, go ahead. You got to wipe out. Yeah.
Oh, no. You just got to wipe out all the creatures to live. You got to kill all the mud demons.
Dude, before antibiotics, you get a cut on your leg and die. You know what I mean? This guy's got no problem going to just alien worlds with a compound leg fracture. His bone's sticking out.
Just going to rub some dirt on it with the dog. Marie Kondo.
It's good dirt.
Let me tell you. Let me tell you about the time I watched Pulp Fiction and Forrest Gump back to back. All right, so I started with Forrest Gump. Beautiful movie. Jenny. A lot of people villainize her, but I think she had a lot of problems. So I think it's unfair to claim that she's the villain. Pulp Fiction. Non-linear storytelling.
Non-linear. Beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Great shake scene.
And then, so, it's fine. You used to be the world's strongest bouncer, you know?
Yeah.
Did you have the PhD level knowledge of human anatomy that Riddick does? Because he knows that between the fourth and the fifth rib, that's the heart. But between the fifth and the sixth rib, body cavity.
I dealt with drunk people, so I didn't have to know anything. I just had one headlock that I – so when I wrestled in high school, I had one move, the over-under. That's all I did, and it worked. So when I headlocked people, it was always the same thing. So it was never a brutal one. So I would take my right arm, put it around their neck, and I would take my left arm and go up underneath their left arm, and I would lift them off the ground because I was 250 and I could bench 350. So I'd lift them off the ground, and I would just carry them out. That was it. Never punching. I didn't like pushing because if you push somebody, like in a bar fight, if you so I guess you have to understand the situation. I didn't understand. But also, you know what? If you get someone just in a headlock, they're going to get out.
Yes.
The problem is if you do my technique and you leave yourself open to get punched.
Mm-hmm.
But no one really did that in my bar. So I figured if
you're panicking,
my move worked best because it prevented spread of the fight. So you run in, you get that headlock, and you drag them out. Because if the fight spreads and more people get punched, more beer gets spilled, then the fight breaks out. So then I got to start. I did fit two indie kids in one headlock once. Which is like one of the best moments of my life.
But well, you're crushing their windpipe, so you know they're totally afraid. You're a massive guy compared. I'm 6'2", and you're bigger than me, bro.
I did hurt my back one time. Someone, one of the regulars, punched one of the people I had in the headlock, and he lurched over. Then my back went. So that was bad. But I just learn
that doesn't happen to Riddick. Yeah,
I learned the science of it more than the actual, because I never wanted to hurt somebody. I remember I only knocked one person out. Well, I got in a couple good, but I only knocked one person out my entire bouncing career. And that's because he was, I guess on GP, he knocked a woman out.
And he's got to sleep off of GP.
And then 100%. And then he was going after her friends who were going after more women. So I was like, I can't let this happen. So GP, then one punch, he went out, which was pretty cool. But the thing is, I was pretty big though. So if the dude's not looking at me and I hit him, like, you have a good chance. But there was one of those knockouts where no one was like, you went too far, Mark. Everyone just kind of went, yeah, that makes sense. Even the cops who showed up, they went, what'd you do? I'm like, well, he hit this person, so I knocked him out. No, like, yeah, good work. Like, no, nobody, like, you know, in fights, sometimes people go too far and they start screaming about like mothers and everything. And you're like, this dude's weird. Right. Like, no one thought that about the situation. But yeah, I didn't want to hurt anybody. So I guess I knew enough to not hurt somebody.
Okay.
But no, no vertebrae.
Okay, so I get it. So you and Riddick learn human anatomy through trial and error, causing pain. You assume,
bad backs,
You're assuming that I'm going to render this man unconscious, and I know exactly where to hit him because, you know, when I've hit the last 20 guys, they experience varying levels of being concussed. Mm-hmm. And so I think if I get this dude here, it's going to work. So that's how Riddick knows about the fifth and sixth body cavity.
I switched up my shoes because one time I went to break up a fight and I slipped on some beer and just fell on my butt. And there's nothing worse than a bouncer falling on his butt, slipping on beer.
Yeah, it is. Shame. It's shame.
And I think that's the second time I actually hurt somebody because I was so mad about falling. But yeah, then I learned shoes. I learned shoes that were better in bars. And I learned how to watch my step whenever fights broke out.
That's what it is, man.
Yeah,
but somebody was trying to play you, and you had to play for blood.
I know. I never had to vertebrate somebody though, so I'm very happy about that. But there is a trial and error. But I gotta say, also too, before we get out of here, I want to read through my notes real quick. I wrote Riddick chokes a bird to death.
Yes, he did.
Which is amazing. There are legendary bad days. I love that line. And then he's like, you're a curse. When he becomes the ruler of the Necromongers, he's called a curse and illegitimate. And he goes, I was born that way. Beautiful. And then not Furia. I love it. And then I put Vin Diesel is great at yelling at pain.
Yeah,
and
he is.
And then I put groans hitting the rock. So there's a scene where the mud monster hits him and he flies into a rock and he lets out a great pain groan. And that Merc Station is a co-op.
It is. It is,
Which
and
makes
that's
me...
and that's how you know that Daddy John's is not a cop, even though he's trying to dress like one.
Oh,
it's a Merc Station, bro.
It's not
a police station, you know. It's who's replenishing in it? Who's replenishing it? Well, you assume that the authorities are, because the way that the universe in Riddick works, you know, you go and capture the bounties and you get paid by the authorities most of the time. Sometimes it's private people, like in part two. But most of the time, it's government.
Hmm. And during the pandemic, you could do bounty toilet paper hunting.
Dude, those bear traps.
And then I did, the bear traps. Oh, his legs get ripped off. And then he's like, go move those. And then I put kill the dog POS. I put he's human, it's cool. And I put they save him with a bunch of caps.
Yeah, they did.
And then all caps, bro, he killed the dog. I don't even know who bro is, but I just wrote that. And then I put, give us some answers, and I did comma, 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 please. And then I put sweet tricks.
Again, Daddy John's, yo. Papa John's, all he wants to know is what happened to his son. And, you know, maybe you didn't know your son. And then at the end of that, at the end of that conversation, you realize, okay, Papa John's actually did know his son was kind of a scumbag, but he was trying to avoid it.
His son was doing morphine, though, because Riddick stabbed him.
Yes, but his son was also a dirtbag.
Yeah.
Because he was willing to kill all those people to quote-unquote save Riddick, when clearly all along all he wanted to do was to turn Riddick in for a bounty. Richard B. Riddick, escaped convict, murderer.
I'm going to give you five characters, and you're going to say which one would be in the Merriam-Webster dictionary under dirtbag.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Let's go.
Cole Hauser from Pitch Black.
Dirtbag.
Peter Stormare from Fargo.
Definite dirtbag.
Let's see. Rachel McAdams from Midnight in Paris.
Question mark?
Have you seen that one? She's a total dirtbag. All right, Hans Landa from Inglourious Basterds.
Well, now that's a whole other level, because that's beyond dirtbag. He's a scumbag.
Yeah.
Because a dirtbag's doing it for money. for personal gratification. That's Londa true. Was doing it for the, Londa was doing it for the state.
Oh yeah.
And cheerfully so, man.
What about the cult from Hereditary?
Oh man. The cult for Hereditary, they worship the devil.
No, they worship the demon that brings them cash.
Oh right.
There's like 40 devils in hell, and they're not worshiping the Antichrist. They're not Rosemary's Babying. They're just right. They're just catfishing a family so they can make some sweet paid. Demon money.
They're trying to get paid. They're trying to get paid.
They're not a dirtbag. Is that a dirtbag or a scumbag?
Leaning towards scumbag, but more heavily dirtbag. When money's involved, you're a dirtbag.
Oh, okay. So who would you put under dirtbag?
You're a scumbag when you're taking pleasure in working for the state. Oh, things like that.
So like any of the dirtbags from like a Verhoeven movie.
Oh, man. So perfect example. Scumbag. Milos Kohagan. He's a scumbag. He's charging people for air, bro.
Yeah. Wow.
And he gleefully is ready to suffocate Venusville. Gleefully.
What a scumbag.
Yeah, you see? Doesn't that work?
And what about Kevin Bacon and Hollow Man? Scumbag or dirtbag? He's a...
Look, depending on whether or not you've seen the director's cut.
He's just horrible.
If you've seen the director's cut, he's a definite scumbag. You know, he starts off as kind of a dirtbag because he's perving all over the place. But you don't see, you know, he's not. And then he becomes a scumbag.
Yeah. So he's a dirtbag who becomes a scumbag.
Absolutely.
So what would you put into the definition of dirtbag?
A dirtbag just does whatever they want for money and personal. Like, I'm better than you. Oh, I'm so, you're a punk, whatever, you know? The kind of person that insults people by calling them, you know, women, you know?
Gordon Gekko.
Gordon Gekko's a dirtbag. He's a definite dirtbag.
So, who'd you put? There's a generation
of people watched that dude say greed is good and said, you know what? You're right. Actually,
I'm gonna live my life like that. I'm gonna start a fight club too.
Yeah, you know, people. You know who else is a dirt? Another
the mayor from Jaws.
The mayor from Jaws is definitely a dirtbag. Well, actually, it's a scumbag because
money.
Money's involved. Money and the state.
Yeah.
Money and
he's
the
elected
state.
Official.
Exactly. So he's a scumbag. He doesn't care if his constituents die when there's an obvious threat on the horizon. Message.
Like a dirtbag could never be elected to office because everyone realizes they're a dirtbag.
I mean,
but a scumbag could become president. Is kind of what you're saying. No, I'm just saying in general. Well, like look we've at, seen. But like we said, Total Recall.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
All right. So give me a character. Millions of children are gonna see this, and it has to be one movie character. So you.
And he's a dirtbag.
Yeah.
He's a dirt Rorschach from Watchmen. He's a dirtbag. He's a dirtbag, and then the people who are scumbags are people who think that Rorschach is actually a hero. You know, do you root for Rorschach when he's beating up bad guys? Sure, but then you start to look at Rorschach and you realize, oh wait, he's not a good person at all.
Do I see myself in him?
Rorschach's not a good person.
Am I a scumbag?
Yeah. If you're rooting for Rorschach. Like, beyond just punching a bad person in the face. Other than that...
Is that a jet ski on his face? Oh, man. Hey, so let's get out of here, Norbert. I think we had a great... This is good. Any final thoughts on this?
Look, man. Chronicles of Riddick, Pitch Black, Riddick. These are three movies you need to see. If you want to skip Chronicles of Riddick, I get it. And this movie is actually designed so that you can go straight from Pitch Black to this movie... Without seeing the second one.
You know what I recommend? I always interrupt you, man. I hate when I'm interrupted, but I always interrupt you.
It's fine, brother. Go.
You know what I think it is? I just get excited when you're talking. I'm like, I want to get on this. I want to like talk over you, but I guess that's what I'm doing. But
go for it.
Okay, Pitch Black, right? Watch Chronicles of Riddick, the beginning. Skip through the prison planet.
You can skip that.
The entirety of it. Then go when he jumps over to fight... The
Lord Marshall,
and then go to Riddick. So just skip out the prison planet entirely. What do you think?
Are you a convict or an inmate?
You want to deprive people of that guy?
Yes, I do. Even though he turns into work. I remember thinking, I hate this scene. Not hate. I dislike this scene, but I like this guy.
I don't know why I like him. Welcome to Butcher Bay or wherever the hell it was.
Like, you're not necessary, but you're doing it.
He's expository, but he's got the weird accent, and his sartorial choices are just quality. I love his outfit, so there it is.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you like my pitch? Does that work?
That's absolutely fair.
Rank them.
Absolutely. Pitch Black, Riddick, Chronicles.
Nice. Who's the biggest dirtbag in all of the movies?
Santana, and then Baby Johns.
Who's the biggest scumbag?
Oof.
Lord Marshall?
Lord Marshall, he's neither alive nor dead.
Yeah, so, he's been transformed.
Yeah, he's experienced transcendence, bro. He's beyond judgment.
Like, Vader can't be either.
No, Vader's a scumbag. He murdered a room full of children.
True. Well, was he a dirtbag then? Then he became a scumbag?
Yes. I'm willing to go there. Yeah. He's killed children of multiple species multiple times. You know, okay, he wants to get vengeance off of GP because the Sand People killed his mother. I get it. That's GP. Mm-hmm. Somebody kills your mom, you got to kill them off of GP. But he killed the younglings, too.
Yeah, he killed all the little Sand People.
Then you can't kill younglings, bro.
No. Yeah, it's a good point. So who's the biggest scumbag before we get out of here? We'll get out of here on this point.
And the biggest scumbag is going to be Tandy Newton's character.
Lady Macbeth?
Because she kind of loves Vako, but then again, you could tell that she's totally just in it for the glam, you know. Mm-hmm. Somehow she has necromancer coffee clatches where she's just, oh my god, did you see what he did yesterday? Can't believe. You can tell that she's that type of person, man. She just wants to be noticed.
Can you believe that Celestial wasn't afraid of me when I tried to push her out the plane?
Oh my god. And I went and I talked to the oracles and they told me, you need to use less vitamin D in your diet. It'll loosen up your stool. And I was like, whatever.
What a scumbag.
Oh my god. And that's just the power of Tandy Newton, her acting. She's the only one having just super fun.
Yeah, vamping it up. She gets that movie.
She's vamping it up. It's so great.
All right. So, hey, thank you for joining. Hey, where can people find you?
I am Norbert Morvan on SoundCloud, at Eddie Kane, CAINE on Twitter.
Love it.
Still putting out crazy songs on the SoundCloud. Check it out. I'm a stranger.
And you're going to have a theme song soon here, too.
Working on the theme song, yes.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining me, man.
Yo, man. Much love to you.
All right. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Norbert, who just dropped some mud, Morvan, this is Movie, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.